Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That is the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Today, as we start the second week of this new year and the second week of the 2024 Brown Briefly, let me introduce the Brieflies. Former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner. Is there a conflict of interest there, Truman?
Yeah, well, it could be. It could be a little. Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. West Texas devotee and former, yes, it's not an oxymoron, military intelligence officer, specialist, excuse me.
There, thank you. Thank you.
He's joining us from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Yeah, I got my hand here on the big red switch ready to throw it to make it happen.
Cut us off and we get out of line, right?
There you go.
And of course, guiding Truman and keeping him on course, even if it may be into the treetops, is Truman's wingmate, arbitrator, mediator, two-time Fulbright scholar, former constitutional law professor, and former Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
Doing great. Wended my way around the limbs and got to the studio on time.
Great. Good to have you here. And of course, zooming in from his home above Burton is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, it's good to be here, and I have to report back that my morning walk around the property is a pine cone dodging operation today. So, we're hanging on with the wind whistling through the fir boughs overhead.
Yes. And I'm Bruce Holman, just preparing for the last of my annual sojourns teaching in the Southern Hemisphere, zooming in from the bluffs above beautiful KVI Beach. And we lost our power last night.
The whole island was down.
12 o'clock. Yeah, it looked like, when I went to the map, it looked like the whole island was out for a bit. But it came on in the middle of the night, and all the lights were on and all that sort of stuff. And so typical sort of Vachon in the winter. Mm-hmm. And then also joining us today is Sharon Nelson, former vice president at C-First Bank, former chief of staff to King County Council member Dal Constantine, a representative for the 34th District, which Vachon's part of, from 2007 to 2010, former state senator for the 34th District from 2010 to 2018, and founder of Protect Our Islands, which later became Preserve Our Islands, as a leader of the fight to stop the massive development of the Glacier Gravel Mine on Maury Island that is now the Maury Island Natural Area. Sharon, it's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right, before we jump into talking about the glacier battle, let's take a moment to check in with everybody about what special things you experienced this past week. Truman?
I attended a meeting. You're going to have to correct me here, Kevin, if I get it wrong. But it's was it the Climate Action Committee part of the Community Council?
No, it's the standalone Vachon Climate Action Group meeting.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for being there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, I attended that talking about solar. We're very interested in adding solar to the airport. We're starting to explore that possibility. Kind of a stretch, but we're looking at it anyway to see if we can make it happen. And then I raced from there over to the peninsula and had dinner with my all of my nieces and nephews. Not all of them, but I've got five of them over there, but several of them, and it was great seeing them. And one of their sons was home from college, so that was a great gathering. The Puerto Vallarta restaurant has been closed for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. They had a big fire, and it's finally back open. And I thought, oh, it's going to be great to get back here. Holy cow, the parking lot. I've never seen so many cars in the parking lot. The place was packed. But anyway, it's very good. So there's my plug for the Puerto Vallarta.
Maybe they want to be an underwriter.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Good idea.
Sharon, how about you? How have your holidays and beginning of the new year been?
Oh, it's been wonderful. We have two grandsons, and I got to spend time with them again yesterday. And I'd have to say they're very lively. We raised two girls. It's a little different experience. And I enjoyed seeing this legislative session commence and not being in Olympia.
Yeah, I can't imagine that was nice.
Right? I was thinking that might be the case.
Yeah.
Nice to be on the sidelines for a while, right?
Yeah.
Great. Craig, how about you?
You know, I'm still working on home repairs, plumbing, electrical, staining, doing all those sorts of things. But I had a wonderful evening on Friday at the Heritage Museum.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce, you can fill in that gap. I just want to say it was a great gathering, and Elsa, the executive director, for a little while longer, and Bruce gave magnificent short speeches at that. It was
magnificent because they were short.
Well,
right?
They were inspiring.
I was wondering about that.
They were short and to the point. So they were excellent. So thank you for having that open house.
Oh, great. Thanks for coming. Kevin, how about you?
Yeah, it's been a good week. The one thing I was able to do is get down to the boat and change out the oil. One of those things you do want to put the boat away with clean oil in the motor if you can. And as I've got all the oil drained out, I rumble around in the parts box for the oil filter, knowing it's there. And, you know, it was at one point. So we were able to go into town and pick up supplies. And now the boat is actually ready to run around again. Once the wind is over. The other thing is that legislative session, there are like six or seven folks working together with me to track bills in the environment area. And I would just say this is the shameless self-promotion part of the Brown Briefly. Go to bit.ly/Vashon, just like you'd spell Vashon with a capital V, followed by T-A-N, no spaces. Vashon, T-A-N, Take Action Network, and take a look at how you might support some legislative action on those issues that you really care about. And hopefully we'll move some good progressive legislation through the session, which of course has been going really well in the last 5 to 6 years.
Hey, thanks. It's been a kind of crazy week for me. As Craig mentioned, we closed the museum on Friday night. It'll be closed until July 5th, when we reopen with a whole new sort of exhibit about Vashon Island. And so been very exciting getting ready. One, to close it down, and then to sort of, yesterday we started moving everything out. We're gonna take it down to the bare walls and then rebuild it from the inside. The exterior won't change at all. We've just recently landmarked the museum building itself, which is a former Lutheran church, and the parsonage next door. So that's sort of our landmark campus here. But it'll be exciting. And then tomorrow I fly off to Australia till the middle of March. And so all the scramble that happens the last day before you leave for a couple months is all going on. But it all seems to be in a chaotic, good chaotic state, as you could say, right? Craig.
Bruce, tell our listeners, what are you doing down there in Australia, New Zealand?
Oh, I do a study abroad program. So it's American students. We're 5 weeks in Melbourne and then 5 weeks in Auckland, New Zealand. Students study Australian, New Zealand history, which I teach. They do an Australian New Zealand biology course that's taught by Australian New Zealand faculty. And this year, taking a new faculty member who will take over next year. This is my swan song, if you will, who is teaching a poetry course and focusing on Aboriginal poets in Australia and Maori poets in New Zealand.
Wow.
So it's great. It's been, this will be my 23rd year doing this. We started this in 2001 and a break for 2 years with COVID. But other than that, I've been doing it every year.
Well, congratulations on that. I did want to tell the people who tune in only to hear the dulcet tones of Bruce Holman that he will be attempting to join us as much as possible via Zoom from the Southern Hemisphere.
I will. Yeah, it's interesting that 11 a.m. here is 5 o'clock in the morning in Melbourne, so I'll get up early.
But a different day, right? A different
day. It's the next day.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what I thought.
And here is Wednesday there, but I'll be able to tune in.
I find that interesting that there's someone's going to be teaching biology of Australia. Man, that ought to be an interesting course.
It's really fascinating. Yeah. Both Australia and New Zealand, very radically different ecosystems than what we have.
Yeah.
Australia broke away from Gondwanaland, the supercontinent, before placental mammals developed. So all the mammals, all the sort of indigenous mammals in Australia are marsupials.
Yeah.
New Zealand broke away from Australia before any mammals developed. So all the ecosystems and all the animals in New Zealand are birds. There's two species of bats, one extinct. Other than that, they're all birds. So it's really very interesting, very different ecosystems. And then, of course, students know the Pacific Northwest ecosystems from having lived here. So pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. All right. Moving along. Thanks for that, Truman. Let me spout what I love about this course. So today's a significant day. It's National Law Enforcement Day, Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. And it's also the day in 1788 that Connecticut became the fifth state to ratify the U.S. Constitution. Found it interesting. Also, 1811, the first all-female golf tournament was held in Scotland. So early, the Scots are early sort of feminist, if you will. And then in 2001, on this date, Apple launched iTunes. So much a part of our lives, and it's only been around for 23 years, but it's sort of like it's part of who we are. So let's move to small talk and with Sharon and talking about the glacier battle. So it's a real joy, Sharon, to welcome you. You were one of the instrumental leaders in resolving the struggle over the expansion of the glacier gravel mine on Maury Island. And it was 13 years ago yesterday, January 8th, that 2011, that King County purchased the Glacier Northwest site, and it has become the Maury Island Natural Area. So Sharon, tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you to Vashon, and how did you get involved with this issue that's dear to the heart of every islander? Which are septic systems, as I understand. That's what got you started, right?
That's correct. We moved here in 1994. We were going to have a quiet rural life with our two daughters. And 9 months after building our home, our septic system failed, the entire field. And the soils had been misdiagnosed. So I wrote a gentleman named Dow Constantine and also Eric Polson and Mike Heavey, and I described the hell we'd been through. And asked them what they were going to do, because there's no, at that point in time, there's no consumer protection at all. And Dow came back and said, well, what are you going to do about it? I can do a task force. Are you going to serve on it? And yes, I did. I served on 5 state task forces. And the following year, we actually got consumer protection legislation through the state legislature. And we had both septic designers, engineers, and installers, pretty much everybody on board. And it took one story, and because my daughter had been very ill because we had opened septic trenches, to get it done. And that's also how I began to know Dow, who sometimes calls me the effluent queen.
Well, that's better than it could be. That's for certain.
Right.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, then after that, how did you get involved in the glacier battle and begin that process?
Well, I went to a community council meeting because they were going to talk about septics, and of course I was an angry mom. And Mike Keevy, then a senator, came and said we were the target for the third runway fill. And the president of community council, also known as Craig Bellis, allowed me to raise my hand and say, what are you going to do about it? And he asked me what we should do about it. And I said, you should form a committee. And Craig essentially said, tag, you're it. And so we formed the Deep Impacts Committee, and we had a group of volunteers who literally did the research on nearshore, prop wash, on arsenic, on water, and really helped reach out to other environmental organizations across the region to make this more than just an island issue. But yeah, Craig Bellis got me into this.
Well, I hesitate to ask this question, but did you want to comment on the meeting we had in my office after this began with some of the glacier people?
Well, I'd love your take as well. But yes, we had a meeting with the glacier people, then Lone Star, in Craig's office. And they wanted to talk about us not doing any research. That was kind of the caveat. You know, just listen to us. We know what we're doing. And there's money to be made for this little proposition. I think it was 5 cents a ton that they were offering. And they left. And Craig and I both were looking at, like, do we need to kind of, like, hose down? Or what should we do? Because it truly was creepy.
Yeah, it was. It was almost soprano-like. We said, did the island get offered money, or did we personally get offered
exactly
money? Exactly. So we didn't take any, so just to make that clear.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. So there's no payola involved, right? Yeah.
And we're on record now.
Yeah, there you go. So full disclosure, Sharon, you know, I was a pilot for an airline at the airport, and I was, of course, very interested in the third runway being built. And I thought, what is wrong with these people? I mean, that's a perfect place to get gravel and run it across the Sound. And then you don't have to truck it all over the highways and everything. And then, of course, I started reading you guys' research and went, oh, okay, I got it. But at first I was like, well, come on, guys. What is this? You know, trying to stop a great project, right? Yeah. Okay, so.
And that's what they were selling in Olympia.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, you know, I mean, it did make sense, except for all of the damage and the terrible things that were done to the island, for crying out loud. So anyway, was this really the impetus for your political career, or did you get going before that? Or
Before we moved here and the septic issue and then the Lone Star Glacier issue, I had not had any interest in politics. In fact, I really didn't know who our representatives were. Mm-hmm. And meeting Dow made a change in my life because he was a brand new legislator and he said, you can make a difference on the septic issue. And then when we started fighting Glacier, I got to meet a number of our representatives, including Senator Patty Murray, whom I adore. She is an incredible person. And I saw, one, how honest they were and how helpful. And they were so responsive. So when it came time to actually serve with Dow, I was happy to go to the King County Council.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Dow, and through you, I got to meet Dow. What a dynamic character he is. Man, oh, man. And just to plug, Craig was about to jump in. He will be on the show next week. Is that correct, Craig?
Next week? He will be our guest next Tuesday.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
So Sharon, if he's listening and not crying in his beer
after the
over
game.
The horrible game yesterday, hopefully you'll still make it.
Yeah.
Hey, Sharon, maybe for our listeners who maybe weren't here 13 years ago or 15 or 20 years ago when this glacier sort of battle started, maybe you can do a quick summary of that whole sort of process from us first learning about the expansion of the glacier mine and all the processes and all the fights that went on, because it was a pretty interesting sort of time on Vashon.
Yeah, it was a long, drawn-out battle. The key to it was the volunteers who did research. And I'd have to say, when you're fighting a large corporate entity, and this is, was actually Taiheo Cement out of Japan, you have to be accurate. And we were fortunate. We formed a group, and about then, salmon were going to be listed, and that we were told there were no salmonids on our near shore. King County actually did a survey and found them. And we found out about eelgrass and herring spawn and water supply and arsenic contamination on the site. And it was incredibly important as volunteers, even though we were hiring some outside folks with money from community council, to be accurate. Because the minute you are not, it's you are a NIMBY. Oh, yeah. And what we kept finding was there were serious issues. We still had trouble getting the word out. And Bruce Morser, who is someone who does a lot of incredible work, started doing drawings of what we were telling him to go in the beachcomber. Those drawings spoke to people and woke up islanders to how serious the threat was. And we also had to study all the different permits they had. And they kept saying we didn't need an EIS. They didn't need a dock permit. Everything was just grandfathered in, and it was challenging every step of the way to what they were proposing and stating that helped us, including finally getting the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to look at the dock that, per their attorney, Ryan Durkin, had been maintained and repaired. And literally, you could put a screwdriver through the pilings.
Oh, yeah.
And all those, it was just one after another. And it dragged on for a lot of years. And there were five different presidents of Preserve Our Islands. It took a lot of work.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that work. I mean, how did you get people to volunteer, and how did you keep people engaged? Because that's always the hard thing with any kind of community activism, is to keep people engaged. How did you do that?
One, I do think the drawings of the beachcomber helped. And we always were running what we called an ad with additional information. And being up at Thriftway, passing out flyers on weekends, being at Strawberry Festival, part of my job when I was with Preserve Islands, because then I left and went to Dow's shop, was to go ahead and talk to Washington Conservation Voters, People for Puget Sound, State Audubon, and getting all of those different entities to back us, which they did, was incredibly important, because then it became a statewide issue. And we used to laugh because all the volunteers were not paid, so there wasn't a dime from Glacier there. And on Friday nights, I'd call through our list, and I'd give them a raise. Because 100% raise on zero is still the same pay rate.
Yeah.
But it was the way we kept motivated, is like, you know, you've earned another raise. And the community was, most of the community was so appreciative and wanted to know more.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like coalition building, you know, and did you find that the coalitions held together?
They held together. At times, whenever we had a change in leadership, it would fracture just a little bit, because it's hard. I would say every president and his or her spouse that came on board was doing 24/7. Oh. There was always another battle. There was always another issue. There was always another attack. And that was difficult. But each one of those people, and I want to mention them just quickly, and they were Brenda and John Moore came right after me. And then there was Libby and Spike McLarty. And then there was J.W. Turner and Jessica Lazowski, and then Amy Carey. Each one of them carried that load. And it was a heavy load, because you end up in court, you lose. But there were other people who helped us, and they were political. I mean, I take a look at still, Dow stood by us 100%, as did most of our legislators in Olympia, and Senator Patty Murray, and Representative Jim McDermott from Congress.
Wow.
Great. Yeah. Kevin?
You know, I came to Vashon in the early 90s, and Susie and I, and started to get involved just right in the community and going to the council meetings and so on. And of course, through that process, heard about the Glacier Mine and said, well, that sounds really terrible. And it was says like, but, you know, this little island against this huge corporation. But I wrote off the checks with a hope and a prayer. And then some years later, it's like fantastic success. So that was my perspective. But from the inside, or you, Sharon, and the folks that you mentioned, what was your first glimpse maybe of Glacier's lack of resolve in terms of being able to win or lose their battle?
They were resolved until the federal decision, until Judge Martinez basically sent them on a monopoly board back to go through the entire national environmental protection process. They were they were determined. excuse me. We had tried to get money in the budget once I went to Olympia several times to try to do an acquisition, and their lobbyists blocked it. And he has a lot of...
You were just going to buy the property outright, is that
right? Well, that was one thought, that we'd try to do it that way, and he'd block it. Once we got that decision, I was able to put, I think it was $12 million in for potential acquisition, and he literally got his Republican friends to hush when it went to the floor in the budget. He just said, it's okay. I don't think they thought we'd really spend it, but we got the money. And that was the first step forward.
So my question is, how did you get the national interest?
That was actually Dow again. As his chief of staff, we would go back on a lobbying trip every year to D.C. And although we weren't officially on the King County Council agenda, we would always get to stay back and talk to representatives separately. And Patty Murray actually came forward with some money. I think it was $6.3 million for the Aquatic Reserve. We were hoping to use that for Glacier, and it was a point in time they weren't ready to go. But it was keeping them apprised.
Right.
Ray Fortner had done some beautiful photos of the site. And we made sure that our delegation, each one of them, had a picture of what it really looked like and meant. And I do think that really helped us.
I was really curious about that. I thought that would take take a lobbying effort on your parts to bring them around, but that's great.
Yeah, Kevin.
And so, Sharon, I should have said, good to see you again. I recall you're graciously visiting us at Indivisible Vashon in one of our meetings to talk about how the legislative process works, and I believe you left us with the document on the key steps and things. And actually, the Indivisible Network now, which includes Indivisible groups across the entire state of Washington, we're active in our bill tracking. And that document that was created from your visit is been shared across the network. So I just want to let you know that that's been super helpful. And just another way of, like, these investments that we make, Jessica Lisovsky is one of the folks, what I call the very trusted advisor, as we got going on the Equity, Social Justice, and Inclusion Committee of the Vashon Community Council. And Equity, Jessica looks back very fondly on what she learned in working with that group of folks who are in that battle. And so I just think of the investments that we make as a community in developing our relationships, but our strengths and skills. So I just wanted to say a shout out. Thank you so much for helping with those things.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad it actually has been passed on.
Yeah, great.
You know, the community council many years ago, you referenced this. We actually did accomplish a lot of things. We sued Tim Iman over the tabs, and we won with the Amalgamated Transit Workers, and we accomplished a lot of other things. But the proudest moment, I think, is volunteering or volunteering Sharon to start that committee. And you know, that's the problem with raising your hand and making a suggestion. And boy, if anybody took the bull by the horns and ran with it to the benefit of everybody on Vashon and Puget Sound, it's you, Sharon, and I thank you very much.
You're here.
You know, there were a number of things. I know you fought, and there was research, and there was a tremendous amount of time put in, and that's probably the major factor that that won this case over the long run. But there were a couple of, not a couple, there were several events that did sort of turn the tide. And you mentioned the one, the district court judge Martinez declaring the construction of the loading facility had to cease for a while the U.S. government did an assessment of the environmental impact. But there was also Doug Sutherland, a supporter of the mine expansion, lost the position of commissioner of public lands to Peter Goldmark, an opponent of the mine expansion. And then I guess there was a statewide effort to restore Puget Sound that was initiated by my old office mate, Governor Chris Gregoire. She came to your support. And then with the support of the Backbone Campaign, Preserve Our Islands organized a protest at the Glacier Mine area with more than 500 protesters that garnered media attention and gave this issue greater visibility. Were those really four of the key issues or key events, were they not?
They were key events. But as far as Commissioner of Public Lands, prior to Doug Sutherland, Jennifer Belcher declared the Morion Aquatic Reserve, which was proposed by someone on Vashon. And she'd already discussed aquatic reserves, and that put Sutherland in a real tough spot, which opened the door for Goldmark to try to see what he could do, even though the lease had been issued. The Backbone Campaign and their efforts to put boats in the water and corral Glacier spawned a lot of media attention when it was needed. Prior to that, though, we had the EIS hearing on Vashon, where 2,000 people showed up. And that helped politically. I mean, that was an eye-opener for people that it was that big of a deal. And as far as Governor Gregoire's efforts to restore Puget Sound, that went hand-in-hand with what we were finding on Maury Island. The herring spawn at the site, the eelgrass, and that the orcas actually used the site. And that was Amy Carey. She had brought in a premier specialist in orcas. And it was a quote that he had that was in the decision, which is, which raindrop caused the flood?
Yeah.
And the judge said, you didn't look at cumulative impacts of this particular project. Go back to go. You can start over. It's only been 14 years, guys. We don't know how much you spent, but have a good time.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm curious on that, the aquatic preserve request, was that coordinated with the campaign or was that a separate initiative that was helpful?
Jennifer Belcher had started declaring aquatic reserves throughout Puget Sound, and we actually had a meeting with her, and as we left, Tom Dean, who was with People for Puget Sound at the time, said, you know, why don't I write up something for the commissioner? And he did. And ultimately, she declared the Maury Island Aquatic Reserve because it was very solid habitat for restoration of the sound.
Nice.
So how many years has it been now? What is it?
We started in 1998. The EIS hearing was in 1999. And then we bought it in the end of 2010. Actually, it was December 31st, 2010. And so now we're 14 years later.
Right. Wow. So now that you have it in your rearview mirror, you know, how do you feel about the whole process and about the actual site itself now? I mean, looking back on it.
Well, I think the issues that we raised about the site were legitimate. I do think Docton Water was in jeopardy. And it was a true David and Goliath story. Yeah. It was one where once we got the EIS, I thought we'd win because I hadn't done one of these before. And I thought, well, you know, the EIS is going to show them that they're wrong and that they can't do it. And what I found is that environmental impact statements are really pretty much written by the consultants of the company. Mm-hmm. And you're going to end up fighting the whole EIS over and over and over. The people on this island we're dedicated are partners in the environmental community were dedicated, and our political partners were dedicated, and we had great legal representation. It takes a coalition. It takes sometimes just being naive, which all of us were, and it takes those who will back you, and they had some financial backers after I left who, when they needed a boost, helped, because It was fighting big money with little money. And Taiyo Cement had tons of money. But they also, when we bought out the site, we were studying their financials in Japan. They're publicly traded. And they were beginning to run into trouble. And that did help us as far as buying it.
Well, you were able to apply a little pressure there, I assume.
Well, I'm curious if I could jump in. Curious if was that public pressure applied locally, or was it that you knew that you had leverage at that point because the company was now kind of had to confess this was really a failed investment on their part?
I think one, it had not gone well. They had a dead asset after essentially 13 years. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at Taiyo's statements, and we knew that they were actually hemorrhaging cash in Japan. It was right when the Great Recession hit. So it was a perfect opportunity. Cascade Land Conservancy was involved. Dow's office was involved. And he ended up coming up because another project had failed with $26 million to add to what I had. And suddenly it seemed reasonable for them to get out.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So, the better of alternatives was to sell, it sounds like, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Versus go back to go, and then we start all over.
Yeah.
Hey, Sharon, how influential was the boat trip when the Cal Portland president and the head of the Japanese corporation, talked to Bill Ruckel's house and, that kind of thing that happened right before they actually made the decision to sell. Was that an important sort of push to get them to actually move, or was that just sort of more of a public kind of thing?
No, it was important, I believe, because they respected Ruckel House and Cascade Land Conservancy. This is another point that they had. It is not something I could engage in, and we were aware of it. Dow was aware of it, but it was another push, and it was a reminder that it was becoming embarrassing politically and at the national level. I mean, we had senators in D.C. who were watching it. So it was definitely help. And Cascade Land Conservancy helped with the deal. And then, of course, Dow's office helped put the money together and also negotiate.
So what I'm hearing is all the pressures that are working, it's still sometimes it's just sitting down face to face can make a huge impact in getting a decision made.
I assume so. Alan Hamlin and Ron Summers and I weren't close, so I wasn't in the room.
Right. Yeah, Kevin. Oh, I thought I saw your hand up, Kevin.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'll get back into proper configuration here.
So, Sharon, just to give people a perspective, I mean, today, the Maury Island Natural Area, which is the glacier sites, 275 acres. The Docton Natural Area is 4 acres. The Docton Forest is 86 acres. And the Maury Island Marine Park is 324 acres. They were just recently linked together by a Vashon Maury Island Land Trust purchase of a corridor to provide 725 acres of recreational property, 12 miles of trails, 3 miles of biking trails for islanders and Washington residents, visitors to use. And you must feel very, very proud of that as an outcome.
I really am. And it started with the purchase of the Marine Park, which was under Greg Nichols. And Dow was working for him at that time and helped with that acquisition. And Vashon Maury Island Land Trust was a partner for us as well. I mean, they stayed engaged. They were aware that there was going to be a potential purchase offer because we trusted them. And it's when I go for a walk up on that site, it's usually busy, not like a freeway, but people are walking, they're biking, they're enjoying it. And it's a beautiful site that overlooks Mount Rainier. I have a 2-year-old dog and I tell him the story of it every time we're up there. And that actually that we bought it for him, which may be a bit of a stretch, but Cody believes me.
Yeah.
He says, Mom, I've heard that story now.
Yeah, that's right. Now you got to tell that one again. Yeah. So, and horses,
Oh, yes.
The horse trails are fabulous there.
So Sharon, you know, the glacier fight was a big part of getting you into politics. After the septic fight, of course, it started it all. But, you know, when you think about that, what did you learn from the glacier battle that let you go on and become such a successful state representative, state senator, and have such an impact at a state level? What lessons did you learn from that glacier battle that became important to you as you moved on in your political career?
First of all, build coalitions and use those coalitions to get where you want to go and respect other people. And do your research, do your homework, and pick your battles. You can't be involved in everything. It worked very well at King County, where I served as chief of staff to Dow. At that point in time, it was a very collaborative council and a lot of fun. Some of my closest friends were on the Republican side. And in Olympia, again, it was building the coalitions. My freshman year, second year, we formed the Blue-Green Alliance. It was labor and environment because they'd been split. And we actually felt we were not being listened to. And we got to, when we went into the speaker's office, all of a sudden we had enough votes that everybody's ears opened. I look at the things that I did in Olympia, and I'd like to go over just a few that were important. One was the money for Maury. The second one was when I moved to the Senate and we took the vote on same-sex marriage. And that was a very emotional evening, because Ed Murray had been working on that for years. And then we finally had the votes, and Governor Gregoire's daughters had asked her to go ahead and go with this bill, and changed her mind. We fought payday lenders and put in restrictions that have put them on their knees in this state. And just as I left, we were able to do some protections for transgender kids that had not been done before because we had been in the minority. It's those steps, and it took coalitions, that make you look back and go, it was worth the time being away from my family.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is not on the agenda, Sharon, so out of the blue here, but this building coalitions, I think, is the name of the game, crossing the aisle. What can we do nationally today, and how can we encourage this to happen? I mean, it just seems to me like it's imperative that we go there. I mean, but how do we get it done? That's the question. I mean, I don't know that you have the answer, but what's your thoughts, you know?
I don't have an answer. I mean, Olympia is such a small place compared to the National mm-hmm. Congress. And what I look at there is the calling names, throwing mud. Once you start doing that, it's hard to ever take a step back. And sometimes you don't hear from different representatives or senators. They're not out there. They're not out there doing the rah-rah. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of folks like Derek Kilmer from Kitsap, who is going to leave Congress after this session, who's done a lot. And I knew him in Olympia. He was a senator there. I look at Senator Patty Murray. Yes, you hear from her, but what is she's getting work done. She is reaching across the aisle when she can. I'm sure of that. But it's harder and harder. And you take a look at the folks who are retiring, it's because it's now just a quagmire of anger and hate. Mm-hmm. We need to change that dialogue, and I don't know how to do it. I'm glad I'm out of politics for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin. Craig.
You know, that's a perfect segue, actually, to a topic that we could spend two or three shows on. With all the experience that you have with the Lone Star Glacier struggle and your experience as a representative and senator and your experience at the federal level as well, have you gotten any advice with regards to a subject you probably know a little bit about, having been a very long time Vashon resident, this deteriorating ferry service that we have on the island that is actually critical to many people on the island and verges on emergency status. As you know, Amy Dreyer and the chamber put together a forum to address alternatives that just weren't a matter of fixing the ferry service. There were other things that were talked about at that. But have you got any thoughts on that issue, aside from the problems that are there, any thoughts on how to go about getting some relief?
Well, I think the chamber, the way they took this off and kept it relatively in a positive mode, not a mudslinging mode, was incredibly important and smart. And building coalitions, again, which I believe they're doing and taking a lead on, is important. But it can't just be with other island communities. Because when you are in Olympia and you are trying to get transportation dollars, they're looking at dollars for bridges, for roads in western and eastern Washington, and then they're looking at ferries. You need every representative or senator from a ferry community to help. And it's important because that is the way to start pushing. When I was there, we had what we called the Ferry Caucus. We met at 7 a.m. on Friday mornings in the members' cafeteria, religiously. And it was bipartisan, both House and Senate. It was bicameral, or bipartisan and bicameral. So House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats. And we could influence the transportation package with it. And it was very effective. That dissolved when we went into the minority. We could not get the money into the transportation budget that we wanted. And now it's going to be important again to push that. I do think the governor's executive order, and I believe in zero emissions, but I think at this point in time we need to ask him and ask WSF to back up a bit. And even if they're diesel boats, get two or three boats built. Losing the basic connection we had with Vigor, which we did at that time, really impacted being able to build. But what they wanted was some assurance that when they geared up, there'd be another boat. Right. And we couldn't do that. They need to get out for contracts. And I would encourage this community to stay active. I think there's activism where you're yelling and screaming, but there's also where I look at the chamber and you're coordinating and you're coming across where politicians want to be with you.
Mm-hmm. You know, that brings up the question for me. How much pushback do we get from the eastern part of the state in transportation support for the ferries?
There's zero support. Yeah. And one thing that hurt us, and Curtis King is from Yakima. He was in charge of transportation when we were in the minority. Wonderful individual. I really do like Senator King. But ferries were last on the list. And that makes it tough because a ferry costs, at least at one point in time when I left, about $400 million. I'm sure it's higher now, probably $500, $600 million. As your transportation dollars are shrinking, because a lot of us are driving electric vehicles, we're using less gas, it's a gas tax, those dollars become smaller and smaller. You need a new bridge, it's gonna crumble. What do? Do you build a new ferry? Do you build a bridge? You better have your coalition in place and an answer to that to be effective in Olympia.
And so Sharon, along those lines, I've heard the argument that says, you know, the road density, the number of people paying to maintain the road network in Western Washington contributes far more funds than the network of people paying to maintain the much longer roads in Eastern Washington. Does that argument have any sway in those circles when you talk about ferry priorities?
In order to get a transportation package across the board, you have to have a vote on funding and to take 60%. You need a broad coalition, and that means building, yes, those roads in eastern Washington and respecting what they need, as well as western Washington. It's one where occasionally transportation packages get hung up just because of the number of votes you need. And it takes work. Right now, Senator Mark Elias is in charge of transportation Senate. I know he's great at negotiating. And in the House, they've got good people. But ferries cannot assume just because we're part of the transportation system that we're everybody's first pick for a dollar.
Right.
It's tough.
Yeah, Sharon, my understanding is out of all the legislative districts, there's only six that have ferries. And so starting from that point, it's an uphill battle from the very beginning. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if it's six, but that's about right. And that's why it was so important to be both the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats. And one of the Republicans from Whidbey Island, Norma Smith, who has since retired, she retired, I think, a year or two after I did, was one of our stalwarts, always working with us, always at the 7 o'clock in the morning meetings, always working for the ferries. Sometimes you have a weak link of the representatives that are representing those, and that's a problem. But when you can all work together, you're much stronger.
Do you want to start a committee, Sharon, to... you've got a good track record.
Yeah. I think she could head it up pretty easily.
I do have to say...
I don't think there'd be any opposition.
No. I do have to say I have a friend in the chamber, and we have chatted. In fact, I actually recommended someone to run a meeting recently named Craig Bellis. And I try to provide advice when I can. My mom's 95, legally blind, and I help her a lot along with my grandsons. And now it's time for families, although I'm always willing to give a little advice behind the scenes.
Great.
Sharon, change the focus a little bit here. You moved to Vashon in the early mid-90s, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Hey, how have you seen the island change? And what kind of things have you seen going on in Vashon that you take pleasure in and or that you worry about?
One, I love our four-way stops. I never, ever want to see a traffic light because I love that. No, you go.
Yeah.
Sometimes when people start battling each other on the island on different issues, it saddens me because when the island starts to split on issues, the tension is there, even in, you know, if you're in one of the grocery stores. I'd say on the ferry docks, and I know, I mean, I take the ferry. My husband does. He's had medical appointments. But sometimes the folks who are so angry and tense with our ferry workers, they need to remember that we are all in this boat together, and that's tough on everyone. We just need to back up, remember we're all on island, and take care of each other.
Yeah. Well, that coalition building that you've done over the time certainly bodes well, you know, for what we need to do here, I think. And your leadership has been absolutely instrumental in all of that, in my mind. So, wish you were still there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, Bruce, you want to go into national now at this point?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Before I do, you know, Sharon, there's an acquaintance of mine now who I consider a good friend, who's a multi-generational islander, who points out that when she was raised on this island, it was all, and her family going back those many generations, it was all about the fact that certain service providers, now we would call them, are really essential to our life here. One of them is ferry workers. And so Susie and I did have a chance to go into town. And you know, it doesn't take but a second just to say thank you for being here to keep the boats running.
Yeah.
But thank you for raising that. So along the lines of national news, 3 days ago was the third anniversary of an attack on our nation's capital, which many attribute to the efforts of the then former president, who had just been rejected by the American people in what was deemed the fairest election in history by Chris Krebs, the person that same president had appointed to oversee elections at the national level. I'm curious what our collective thoughts are about this historic event, where we are today politically as the United States. I invite Sharon if you'd like to start that conversation, but any others, jump in.
Well, I agree with President Biden. Either democracy is going to be the premise of how we operate, or we are going to end up with an autocracy. And 2024 is going to be critical for that. January 6th should never have happened. Part of it is all the social media and building it. And literally folks at the Capitol not being prepared for what could come their way. But to have a president at that point in time, and now former president, stoking the fires is not acceptable. It jeopardizes people's lives, and we lost lives. It could happen again. And January 6th, for people to say that it was just a tour of the White House or the Congress floors me. I look at, I have been there, and for what they did and ravaged that building and had to hide the vice president and the speaker should never be part of our history, and yet it is. And every person, I believe, in this state and in the United States should turn the back on what happened and demand a change. And yet we are going to face possibly a close election.
I have friends that these guys know are on the other side of all of this. And I spoke with one recently, and I said, well, what about January 6th? And he said, you know, that was really no big deal. And I was floored. I mean, floored. And I wanted to say, what are you watching in the news? I mean, are you not paying attention to what's happening in the world? And how do you get through to some of these folks? You know,
you are able to suspend reality if you want to believe,
I guess,
something. What was the statistic I saw this morning that over 90% of Democrats believe that was a violent insurrection. And something like 10% of Republicans thought it was a violent, the other 90% thought it was really kind of no big deal.
So what was it, 1851, that the Paris tourist toured the Bastille?
Mm-hmm. the tourist in Bastille.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that meme. I mean, come on.
Well, on a positive note, I think January 6th and what this former president has done has turned off many independents and some moderate Republicans, particularly women. And with what the Supreme Court did on a woman's right to choose, I'm hoping that will help us in 2024. Because I look at a time when an abortion meant a coat hanger. And that was when I was in high school and headed to college, and birth control was not yet really available. Mm-hmm. And I never thought we'd be back to where we are for women, and we are. And we have to be awake and aware, because literally we are supposed to be subjected to whatever the male patriarchy wants. So wake up, ladies. Mm-hmm.
You know, Sharon, I was listening to when some of the elections were coming up, like in Ohio, at the issue about codifying abortions in the state's constitution, and the pundits were, do you think this issue still has weight? Do you think people still care about this women's right for reproductive choice? And I thought, to my mind, that's got to be a guy asking that question. Because as long as women are still able to, give birth, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Hey, one thing that I do want to mention, because yes, we do have a close election, a challenging election coming up. There's angst around that. I totally respect that. Indivisible Vachon plays an outsized role in the state of producing opportunities for people to weigh in and contribute to electing the candidates that we deserve, that we really care about. And I will, again, shameless self-promotion, get out your pens and pencils, bit.ly/TANelections, all capital letters, TANELECTIONS. There is a resource that we have made available to our fellow indivisible groups across the state about not only how you can support candidates here in Washington, but where are the really important states to make sure that our current administration is reseated, and how to hold the Senate and how to flip the House. And you can find options for all of those things and ways that you can take action when you choose. So just thank you so much for putting that in perspective for us. And Bruce, for giving me the opportunity to shout out another opportunity for people to engage.
Right, and Sharon, we just want to thank you for taking the time and joining us and been a fascinating discussion on all different levels. So thank you very much.
And come back often. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
All right. And next week, we have King County Executive Dal Constantine here. Craig, you want to say a few words?
Just that I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lively discussion, friendly like it was today. Bringing back your old colleague and friend, Dow, Sharon. Dow, hopefully you're not too depressed after yesterday's game, and you'll be in a great mood, and we'll see you next week.
We'll raise your spirits here on the Briefly for sure.
There you go. See you all next week.
All right.